The views expressed on this podcast are only those of the individuals featured on the show and do not in any way reflect the official policy of the United States government.
You are listening to the Embassy Wealth Podcast. We believe wealth isn't just about finances and money. It includes health, relationships, and anything else that makes you excited to get up in the morning. We interview members of the foreign affairs community to see how they're building wealth, both personally and financially, no matter where they're posted. This is your host, Tanya Salsa. Let's get to today's show. Welcome to the Embassy Wealth Podcast. And today I am really excited to talk to Malin Carr. And Malin and I were friends, and I actually found out that she is responsible for this incredible movement that has started at a lot of embassies and consulates, which is this financial literacy group that she started at her current post. She's part of a tandem. She has strong ties to Florida, is a University of Florida Gators fan. Is an amazing cook, by the way, too. And it's just a joy to every post that she goes to. And I'm really excited to talk to her because I think she's got some very unique perspectives on not only bringing financial literacy to embassies and consulates around the world and talking to colleagues about money, but also talking to family members, because a lot of us come from backgrounds where maybe money is not really a topic that's discussed at all. And generally, that's to the detriment because of the people that aren't discussing, because you don't learn about investments. You don't see what other people are doing. And that's also part of the goal of this podcast, is to sort of normalize the discussion around money and finances so that we can all crowdsource the information that we have and all benefit from each other. Malin, welcome to the show.
Hi, Tanya. Hi, listeners. I am super excited to be with you too. And I am a big fan of the podcast. I've listened to all of them.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad somebody's listening out there.
There is a Pilates studio out in Virginia that I know I'm going to visit. That one is honestly one of my favorites, but I wish I was coming on to talk about it, how I'm a millionaire real estate investor like you. I'm going to get there someday, but I'm definitely here to share my story and hope it helps others.
Awesome. And you know, everybody is on their own journey and we're all on different parts of that journey and different paths, right? Mm-hmm. So I think we've got a really good mix of guests who have made it, you know, really big in certain areas and other people who are just starting on certain paths. But I think we all have something to learn from each other and teach each other. So tell us a little bit about the origin of these literacy groups. What sort of prompted you to create something like this?
Yeah, thanks for asking. You know, it kind of started organically among female colleagues and friends in minority groups. So some friends in DC, we got together and started a money club, as we called it, money club, big money club. And what it was sharing information about everything from real estate to taxes to TSP. You know, a lot of us were feds. So it was kind of a way to lift each other up and lift up the minority groups. As you said, you know, I'm Asian American, and talking about money or asking about money in those cultures can be perceived as rude and taboo. And honestly, I wouldn't be where I am financially if my father didn't go against that. He shared information freely as he was in the military and also had TSP. And so when I joined State Department, from day one, helped me with mine. I didn't even, you know, as a young, let's say a young officer with a smaller salary, he helped me max out my TSP and I had no idea what he just did. All I know is that my
paycheck. Like, sure, Dad, no problem. If that's what I need to do. Mm-hmm.
Do this, max this out, learn to live with the rest in his very, you know, military voice. And I was like, what did you do to my paycheck? But almost, you know, 17 years later, I'm really grateful that I had, you know, that kind of direction. He didn't just direct me and leave me alone. He kind of helped me through my whole journey, teaching me about, you know, changing allocations, you know, which ones to invest in, meaning I had someone. And so I try to be that someone for people around me. It helps me connect with people outside of my usual GSO job, which usually isn't always rainbows and unicorns.
Well, what do you mean? My sink is broken. I need it fixed now. Thanks.
Yeah, I'm in my marine ball dress. You want to talk to me about your toilet? Another level to connect with people. And I found, especially here at U.S. Consulate Rio de Janeiro, a great group to get started with, you know, instead of, you know, maybe identifying females or, you know, minority groups, I opened it up to FAST officers and Marines. It was so obvious that, you know, financial health discussions are good for everyone. And especially our detachment, who I love to cook for. You mentioned I love cooking for them once a month, but I kind of sprinkle our monthly dinners with financial news as well. And so grateful they've embraced the financial club because they get to meet other officers of post they don't usually connect with as well. So money club, yes. Money, financial health, yes. But it's really building a network of people at post. It's needed more than ever, especially during the pandemic.
I'm curious. So when you first put this out to the FAST officers, first and second tour, right? And the Marines, what kind of response did you get? I mean, because I think sometimes when you put it out there, I don't know if colleagues are real comfortable talking about their money with other colleagues that maybe they don't know very well. Like what was sort of that initial reaction when you, you know, tested the waters to see if anybody was interested?
We definitely got great interest, but there was some questions like, do I have to share, you know, like my stuff? And I approached it like this. I said, come and learn. You know, it doesn't have to be interactive. The first meeting, I kind of lead and just say, these are the topics to present. I'm not a financial expert, but I invite experts in their field to come speak. You know, I have this network of, you know, great friends and individuals that are willing to share their knowledge with the groups that I form. So I just try to like lay it out there that, you know, I'm not demanding information or participation from the start. Come and learn. And if you learn something and take away something, great. If you can offer the group info, if you know about cryptocurrency or have some great tips for others about your financial institution, you know, that's great. Bring that to the group. The whole point is creating a safe, you know, bubble. And I mean that, like, you know, what happens in financial group stays in financial group. We talk about, now the group has kind of blossomed, and we get into the nitty gritty of people's investments, their debt strategy, and everything from like TSP portfolios to, you know, looking at houses in Rio.
I would think in order to create that safe space, it has to be kind of a smaller group. How many people are in your group at this point?
Ooh, absolutely. So there's about 14 people in the group. Some chose to join virtually. You know, we always give that option. That way they can kind of lurk and maybe learn about it. The conversations in person are the best. You know, no cameras, no recordings, nothing. And we just talk about pretty much anything on everyone's mind. Everything from taxes, for example, is our next discussion. So I have a CPA that's going to be joining our group to talk about taxes, how they differ if you own a property, for example. So really great information. So we really just read the group. But you're right, small groups equal great conversation. And so the response has been wonderful from the FASTOs and Marines, but also from the senior staff who hear about it. And more than five individuals have asked me to do a senior group. So I will never I will not cross the streams. You know, talking about your investments in front of your boss might kill those discussions, especially if it is the boss. So I am preparing a brown bag for the senior staff in our embassy that want to come together and form a group as well. But I recognize that that dynamic would change significantly. They have told me, I kind of did a poll out to the club. I was like, hey, who would be cool with senior staff joining? And everyone was like, no.
They're like, no.
And I was like, you know what? I get it. They're very different times of their career. They're closer to retirement, perhaps. Maybe they're on their second, third.
They're different concerns at different stages, right? Of both your career and your life about, you know, what you want to invest in. And there's different strategies, right? Like as you near the end of your career, it's a completely different, you know, array of choices than when you start. And also you have different resources.
Right. Yeah, much more resources with your pay grade, of course. But also, you're right, different concerns. For example, opening up custodial accounts versus 529s for your dependents. You know, with the FASTO officers, you know, it's not so much by age or grade, because, you know, FASTOs can be any age, you know. So I talk about those topics, you know, about opening them for, like in my case, my nephews, your godchildren, you know, siblings even. So, but again, the feedback has been incredible. And some of the comments coming out of the club so far are, you know, you're helping me build generational wealth. You are changing the game for me and my family. I'm sharing this information with my mother. I'm sharing this with my siblings. Like, I just did it to like continue on this positive path that my friends and I started in DC. And now it's like, wow, I didn't, you know, not even really knowing just really how many people our group's touching. So it's been really cool.
And I think what's really amazing too about this community that you've created, that it's all rallying around sort of this financial literacy idea, is that people are coming and they're learning, but they're not only learning, they're like taking action, right? They're actually doing things that you're talking about in the club. Can you give us maybe some examples of like some stories or some things that you've observed about how this club has really made an impact on people's lives?
Oh, big time. So just from day one, talking about the TSPs, and you kind of recognize our Marine detachment, you know, they, it's one thing to like say things and say, okay, follow up, do that, talk to your financial buddy. Everyone has a buddy in our club to be accountable to if they wanted one. But for our Marines, for example, I said, you know, I would like to meet with you separately in a meeting and we can open up the computers and do it in real time.
Nice.
And this was, I said, you know, I'm not trying to max you all out like my dad did to me, but what I want you to do is get the matching. And if you weren't hired before a certain date in 2019, the matching wasn't automatic. Thankfully, TSP has saved many from making the mistake of joining and not putting in the matching. So yeah, it was pretty effective for those that we went in. We changed to the matching. I said, you guys are missing out on free money. Who wants free money? And it was like, yeah, dumb all. And of course we do. And I said, okay, it's kind of like this. And I took out $100. I put it on the table. And I said, every month, if you put $100 down, you get to keep mine. Who wants to do that? And they were like, this is a no-brainer. And I was like, you're not doing it right now. So let's do it together. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, for several of the Marines that changed on day one, we have new Marines in the debt. So I'm going to sit down and give them the same spiel. In a different part of investing, myself included, is real estate. And so we have two members in our group that are either finalizing their closing, or another one that, you know, took your master class and is in the process of purchasing. So yeah, real concrete wealth building. So this has been pretty great.
I love that idea. And, you know, going back to a little bit about your origin story in terms of, you know, being a female, being a minority, and recognizing right away that like in a lot of cultures and a lot of families, right, like money is not something that you talk about. And you've really, it sounds like, benefited from not only your father's instruction, but you're kind of passing that along, right, to the next generation. And I know that you and I had talked a little while back about you're kind of like the money guru for your nephews. Tell us a little bit about that, because I think the audience would enjoy hearing about some like their progression, and tell us how old they are too first before we start.
Absolutely. Okay. So for since the time I talked to you, instead of me being the girl, let me tell you how these 14-year-olds are now the guru, and they're schooling me. I wanted to make sure my nephews, all of them, all four nephews, but especially twins that are so like, in, let's say, interested in the stock market and trading and stocks, et cetera. I started when they were 12, okay, 12 and a half. And I give them a lot of things for their birthdays. I've had custodial accounts open since the day they were born. So it's like I've been planning for them, but I never planned with them. I'd say other foreign service officers have expressed over time this need for, how do I speak to my kids about money? How do you even like start this, you know, concept without yelling about like save money, you know?
Yeah. Without being the nagging parent, yeah, like you should be doing this, like you should be putting your money away. Don't spend it all. Yeah. Yeah. How do you talk to them in a way that gets their imagination engaged, that they are interested in the topic? And you've done that very successfully.
Oh yeah. Okay. So started with the twins at 12, and our conversation, I called it Auntie Mullen's Money Club. And every money club, one, I started them off with an amount of money that they could invest. And I told them, this was yours and we're going to watch it grow together. And every time we had a money club, I would give them another $25 on the condition that they would tell me where they were going to invest it and why. So the first meeting went something like this. What are we talking about? Why are we talking about money? Auntie Mullen? Okay, fine.
I have questions. Just give me $25. Yeah.
I have questions. What's a bank account? Like the most, let's say, things that we would take for granted as an adult, like start opening an account, maybe getting a credit card. They wanted to know how credit worked. And these are all let's say, topics you get forced to learn in college when you're in debt and you figure life out badly, maybe. So yeah, I didn't want that to happen to them. You know, they are just bright twins. So from meeting one of what is a bank account, we are now like on meeting, I don't know, 15. And the last meeting they were talking about, let's say the Amazon stock split, selling their crypto, and, you know, which top 10 stocks they're considering next. Like, I have gone from informing my kids about, I call them my kids, about like saving money for the future, to them schooling on me about how much I should invest before Amazon splits in June 5-1 or something. You know what I mean? It's crazy.
I think I need to join Auntie Mullen's Money Club, because I mean, I can't do that. Yeah, no. I mean, and these are 14-year-olds, and they would probably run circles around me with their, you know, stock tips and things like that. So, but how did you get them over the course of 15 sessions or whatever? So from, you know, talking about a bank account to getting them that interested. I mean, did you sit down and sort of walk them through what each thing was? And then, I mean, how did you get them engaged, right? Because I think it's really in the details and the how-to.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I asked them what they loved. What did you love? And, you know, they loved going out to eat. They're getting into tennis. You know, they talked about their hobbies. And I was like, how do you think mom and dad pays for all of this stuff?
Mm-hmm. And I good question.
The value of money. Like, boys, do you know how much your meal at McDonald's cost? Like, for real. And they're like, oh, I don't know, about $5. And I was like, okay, it's a good start. At least it's not like, oh, a million. They had some concept of money. But they both have been saving money. You know, they get money for their Christmas and, you know, their loving grandparents. And so, but they're twins, but they're very different in how they spend it. One spends it like it's going out of style. The other one won't spend a penny, even if you forced him. So it's really funny to ask, you know, how is your financial health today, boys? Where is your money? And one's like, I have mine in my room. My mom keeps my money. It's about, you know, $700. And I said,
wow. Number,
yeah, right. Ooh, for 12.
Yeah, said, this is a lot of money for a now 14-year-old, right? So
the one that spends it like it's water, he had like just about half of what the other one did. But the point was, I said, you answered and said, it's about. And you gave me an amount, you know, from today, I'd like you to know exactly how much you have and where it is at all times. And we went over the best place to keep money. So I said, boys, if the money is in your room, you know, if you check it tomorrow, how much money is in the room? And they said, what? The exact same amount. And I said, yes, exactly. If you put it into something, into, let's say a savings account, and the person, we talked about a savings account before, and the difference between checking and savings. And I said, remember I talked about savings accounts, and you earn a little bit of money for putting it in this special account. If you checked it in a year, how much money would be there? And they go, oh, it would raise by this amount. And I said, yeah, isn't that better than being in your room? And they said, oh yeah, of course. And I said, okay, we're going to keep on finding better places than your room to save money, to make it grow better. And I told them, I said, Auntie Mullen's money makes money in her sleep, because she puts it in places that grow really well. And so it's funny, the second class, I said, boys, what did you learn from last class? And then I started laughing so hard. They were like, keeping it in our bedrooms is worse than inflation. We lose money. I was like, so 14, good.
Talking about inflation. I love that too, honestly. That is great. That is great.
I think starting with something they love and know, making them understand the value of it and how much it takes to earn the amount for something, you know, going to the movie. They love going to the movies. How much does it cost them that? How much does it cost for their pack of Pokemon cards? Figure that out. And you know, I think relating it to them in that sense of how many Pokemon cards is in that, you know, how many can you buy today? How many can you buy tomorrow? Yeah. They, let's say kind of working on their interests really helped them get involved. Also, they took a natural like interest in everything going on. The news was, you know, it was like around that time when like AMC was going nuts and GameStop. And
oh,
like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I'd make them do research and I'm like, hey, pull three articles about some cool in the financial world. Oh my goodness. On like meeting number four, Elliot is one of the twins. Elliot's like, Auntie Mullen, I just want to let you know, I sold my AMC stock and I made $43. And I was like, oh my, you're already selling? We were just talking about buying. Okay, he was like, yeah, it would be smart to hold that one because it was sliding. And I was like, wow. Okay.
You're like, my work is done here. I'm paving a great foundation for a financial future. And,
I started with index funds and some like mutual funds and safe things. And he was like, you know, I'm single stock and Mullen. No, I'm doing this. I'm like, okay, great.
And to each their own, right? I mean, that's what's the great thing about investments. There is so much out there that there really is an investment for everybody, right? And it's funny because, I mean, I have two girls. My girls are 4 and 6, and we have little money things that we do too, right? Because I want them to be very financially aware when they're growing up, and that money obviously does not grow on trees. So what they do is, I mean, obviously they get like $2 for their teeth right now. Every night, like if they are really good and they clean up their plates after dinner and they get their pajamas on, they brush their teeth and they get into bed and they don't pop out of bed. Parents, you know what I'm talking about? Like the constant 3, 4, 5 times after you've put them to bed, they don't pop out of bed. They get a dollar. And every morning in the morning, I was like, okay, how do we do last night? And they're like, oh, well, we forgot that we needed this thing, so we didn't get our dollar today. And they're all like grumpy.
Oh, accountable. But,
yeah. And it's very simple. We have a little jar and then like literally they get a little dollar and they can see it. It's tangible because they're small kids. Right. So, and we do that. And then, you know, they used to go to the store and cry about like they wanted this or that thing. And I'm trying to get them to look at the prices. I'm like, oh, how much is that? And there was a little backpack that the littlest one really wanted because her friend at school had it. I think it was like, I don't know, $32. And they know the numbers. They can count very well. She was sitting there counting about how many days. And she was like, Mommy, that's a lot of days. I'm like, uh-huh. Yes, it is.
No popping up month.
Exactly. So they're starting to get this idea of like, what is money? How do I use it? And I can use it just like you said, to buy fun things, right? So this is just sort of initial sort of conversations about money and what the value of money, what money can be used for. We're going to get to the investment conversations a little bit later, but I also bring them to like my rentals, right? When like we're doing work on them. And it's so funny because they're, you know, I almost don't want to tell them because they go to school and they're like, well, we were at one of our houses this weekend. Oh, and it sounds so like bougie.
20 houses. I'm like,
I know, don't tell that to your teacher because it doesn't come off right. And I'm like, oh no. But then at the same time, I'm a big proponent of let's all talk about money. So I'm like, well, it's true. I mean, if they ask, I'm like, so I asked them, I'm like, well, if your teacher asks where your houses are, what are you going to tell them? They're like, and they're confused because they don't understand where the houses are yet. But we're getting there, right? Yeah. So financial literacy, all ages.
They see a hardworking mom, and open with money, and they see that you're out there making it. So I hope even that experience helps them not take money for granted. So good experiences all around. Also, not just talking about how much money can buy, but in our group we talk about where we can save money so that there is more money to invest. And one of the things that kicked off one of our most recent topics, which was travel hacking. And we had Sandy Schweitzer. I always try to open the door to my Asian American Foreign Affairs Association as well. So we kind of do the group session open to both Rio Financial Club and AFA. And then afterwards, we have discussion with the speaker and ourselves about the topic. And it really was, you know, how to use credit cards as tools. Tools for free travel upgrades.
Yeah, completely, because that'll save you money. Lots of money.
And the underlying thing wasn't about flying in style. The underlying lesson was, if my travel is free, then that frees up X amount of thousands of dollars a year that I can throw into TSP,
or investments,
or
that's
IRA,
right,
my real estate, you know, building up a down payment. And so I tried not to make it like this all about big ballin' and like flying in Emirates, you know, first class Q suites. It really is.
Which would be nice too. Don't get us wrong. one day. But this is why we're investing, so that you can do all of those things, right?
My goal is to fly horizontal all the time. That's it. That's it.
I think that's like everyone's goal in the Foreign Service.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. So truly.
We can make it the Flying Horizontal Club. People are like, what the heck is that?
I would love to have your talk and her talk have been requested over and over. Can we bring them back? Can we do a real estate part two, taking care of our new rentals? And so there is a topic out there for everyone. And really the ones that are, I think, on most of FSO's minds are like, how do we build wealth from afar? Or how do we maximize our careers? Mm-hmm. Let's say the the privileges and circumstances that come with them to build wealth as we go along. So we also talked about money sucks. And I talked about this with my twins as well. What are some things in your life that suck money away from your investments? And you can imagine this was quite a lively conversation. You can imagine what were some people's obsessions. So
everything. Oh, I'm curious to hear now. You can't throw that down without me asking now. Like what?
Okay. Well, definitely not in this club, but in previous club, we've had a sneakerhead. Yeah, we've had purses, subscriptions that people don't even know about.
Oh, right? Yeah, that's a huge one. Yeah.
They're like, I think I have Hulu, Netflix, Disney Plus, HBO, and I just named all of them. And I was like, do you watch any? And they're like, don't have time. And I was like, and you know, we always talk about, the Starbucks, right? We joked about it for a long time. And I was like, listen, if you're buying Starbucks, I'm not about that life. Yes, you don't get rich, you know, giving up your $5 coffee, and you should enjoy things that make you happy. The point is, you know, everything in moderation, or if that's something you love, keep it in your life, but maybe not all of the things.
All of the time. Yeah. And one small hack for that subscription thing is I routinely, with credit cards, for example, I actually cancel them at a certain point because I figure that anything that's on them that's a subscription eventually is going to find me to want to pay. And then I can decide whether I want to continue it or not. Right. And especially running a business, it's like you sign up for all of these things and you don't realize at a certain point, like how many things you're actually subscribed to and whether you're using them at the rate that you need to be for the price that you're paying. So small tip there.
We challenged everyone. I said, write down everything that your life costs. Write down your expenses. You know, one of our topics in the first meeting was, where are you in your financial health? Do you have a budget? And yeah, some of the questions that came out were like, I need a budget. I don't know how to budget. And we talked about the like apps that people can use. And one of them came out with Mint that people are using. And if you kind of just have this sense of, I stay within my means, but I don't know how much I spend or how much I have left over.
People are surprised.
I said,
big surprises. Yeah.
Budgeting tools, and you shouldn't think of this concept of how much I have left over. You know, go with the pay yourself first. And I said, go ahead and do like 3-month trial, track your spending, find out how much you quote unquote have left over, and then start putting that into your TSP or a separate IRA or investment or brokerage or whatever first. And then using the rest. It's a little game shift for most, right? Yeah, especially the Marines are like, why are we planning for the future? We are 19. And I was
That's exactly the time where you should start. Actually, when you get your first paycheck is really when you start to think about it. Cause I mean, a lot of this stuff is built over time and it needs to be thought about, you know, at the beginning rather than at the end.
Oh, but yeah. I wanted some cheesy tattoo that said, time in market is better than timing the market. Cheesy expression. But I was like, I'm mad that I started at 23. Can you imagine if I started at 18? I'd have 5 more years. And please listen to me. They're all gentlemen right now. They're all males in our detachment. I was like, God, listen to me on this one. Please get that free money. Anything you have extra, go get
it. At least at a minimum. Exactly. Exactly. But yeah. I think the point is a really good one. And that is, the numbers should not be fuzzy. It shouldn't be, I think I have this, just like what you're saying with your nephews and also that you're talking about in your money clubs. Like you really should have a very good handle on where that money is going. And at the beginning, especially if you're not great with like record keeping, certain people that might be hosting this podcast, you know, you're kind of like, and not to say that I was not good with money, because I was an excellent saver. So I was I saved. So that was like my strength, but keeping track of everything, no clue. So it took a while for me to sit down and put it all in a paper. And kind of as a little bit of an aside, right before I left the department, I joined a mastermind group, which, you know, had a bunch of people that were business owners, people that track their net worth. Mm-hmm. And this was the thing that over and over again, I found that people that were significantly wealthy had a very good handle on exactly what their net worth was and how they were increasing it and through what means, right? It was even to the point where in a particular mastermind group I joined that we would all share our net worth spreadsheets, and it had it down to almost the dollar of like, you know, real estate assets, cash, retirement accounts, stocks. I mean, literally they went through the whole thing, and we would we would do that quarterly. And we would have to present. And most people are like, oh my God, how on earth would you be able to? But honestly, I mean, it helps me because opening your financial books up to people who are, you know, wealthier or more established than you are, they're kind of like, what's this number? And why is this? This looks like it's kind of underperforming. And if mm-hmm. you don't take it personally, right, you're not like, oh, they're picking on me. They're actually trying to help. They're saying, hey, but we put money here and you can pay less taxes by doing this kind of thing. I mean, these are people with significant, you know, wealth, and they've built it by doing certain strategies that you may or may not know about. So, you know, we opened up all of our numbers, and it's interesting too, because you find like, there are some things that like, I'm really good at, like real estate is obviously my thing. And they're like, how do you, and so they had questions for me. And so, you know, it's a good thing.
Each other. I love it.
Each other. Right. But you have to be willing to put yourself out there to discuss. And I totally get that, like putting your net worth on a sheet is kind of like wandering around naked in the embassy. Sorry for the visual, guys, but I think there is a certain amount of a little bit of discomfort that in a trade-off for better information and learning from
each other. Big time. We had to break down that barrier of really it's shame and guilt. And I don't want to show you, honestly, as federal employees, our salaries are out there.
Yeah. And everybody knows what we make. Yeah.
I would be so forthcoming. So in one of the experience in the past, I opened up a brokerage from zero and I showed kind of what I'm investing in, which index funds, which mutual fund, what, you know, some crazy spinoff and getting an individual stock. But how long it took to grow that brokerage from zero to $50,000. And with this group, with all eyes on it, like I did no moves without them. I showed them the spreadsheets, everything. It took about 14 months to go from zero to 50 grand with constant, you know, contributions and investing in the right index funds, at least for me. And
I take that Mullen masterclass, please? Can I sign up, please? Thank you.
Yeah, for sure. Anyone can. It was a demonstration that laid my kind of finances open.
I think
kind of showing them my vulnerability and saying like, this is us starting at zero in this brokerage together. And I'm going to put X amount in every pay period. Every pay period, I'm going to do this. And this will, we'll watch it grow and fall together. And sometimes they took dips, but overall, you know, at one time the growth in the portfolio was like 67%. And it was bonkers. That has said, obviously with the current dip, the growth, it's still green, but it's like more like it's closer to 30 or 20 or something, whatever. But in that height, they were like, whoa. And I said, what is the rule here? If you can do better than the stock market or God forbid a savings account, you know, growth, you're just trying to do better than where you had your money yesterday. So if you can put your money somewhere better today, then let's do that. Also a good lesson for us is everything we share, even from the experts using federal policy and like rules, people need to go out and do their own research and they need to confirm their own info and make the decision based on their individual financial health and their risk tolerance.
Completely. Very personal.
Very investment. Personal. And I said, if you do, you know, right now we're all starting out and, you know, there are some changes you can make without a financial advisor. But if you feel you're at that point where you need someone or you want someone that's paid to do that, you know, fee-based or any other type of payment schedule, please make that choice for yourself. You know, really, it's just trying to get better than yesterday. I do encourage, trust, but verify.
And I think that's a really good point too, is that, you know, we cannot know everything. And there are people that you can reach out to, you know, colleagues, experts, advisors. Some of them are going to be fee-based. Some of them are just people maybe that you're sitting across from the cafeteria table and discussing with, right? So, I mean, there's a big wealth of knowledge out there. And I think you'd be surprised that more often than not, people are willing to share, especially when they're doing well, right? Because, you know, I think they're somewhat proud of like what they've accomplished. And as long as they're not, you know, like telling you where the secret gold mine is, like I'm sure they'd be happy to share some of the things that works for them. Going back to your story about starting with $0 in a brokerage and going to 50,000 in 40, I'm sorry, I had to come back to that because otherwise my listeners would have written, why didn't you ask her? Right. How do you do that? I'm curious.
We started with dollar cost averaging, putting in the same amount every 2 weeks. Okay. And for this experiment, I was devoting a large amount of my income to this brokerage. And we invested together in mutual funds and kind of the main like S&P 500 index funds. So first, before jumping into this experiment, we talked about an index fund. You know, why buy one stock when you can buy all of them? And then the difference between index funds and a mutual fund. You know, so but before we jumped into this, there was a little bit of prep work. And then I told them I would only, you know, how I would invest each allocation, rather contribution. And it was good to see every 2 weeks from my paycheck, I'd put in an amount. I would split that paycheck between index funds and then anything left over that couldn't buy a whole index fund, I'd throw in mutual funds. And it was funny, that mutual fund is the one that grew the fastest.
Interesting.
But the real lesson there was all of them were green. Mm-hmm. All of them, even though they took hits along the way and lost some money along the way, from day one to day, like month 14, they were green. And it kind of instilled a little bit of faith in some of our members that see the stock market period as a gamble. And I said, it's a gamble if you don't know what you're buying and why you're buying it, or you're putting everything into one basket. If you're all in Bitcoin and you're like, ka-ching, cryptocurrency is the tiniest part of my portfolio. It's well under 10 grand. I dabble in it enough to read and learn about it. You know, me and my sisters, we have this group where we talk about it and with my dad and my brother-in-law. But as far as making it a core, I'm not comfortable enough to make crypto part of something I deal with. So what am I comfortable with? Things that I've researched, things that I can see, funds, index funds that I know over time have been successful. And as if they've got too many big players to be unsuccessful, you know, spreading your money in an index fund is, let's say, a lot less risky and maybe less
profitable.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Than putting it all on Amazon or something. But for me, it's the stability of seeing those successful funds. And it was a good experiment. It was kind of like, whoa, okay, I'm buying those funds. You know, everyone can Google like top three index funds, but I mean, look at their history. So the twins, going back to the twins, one of their first lessons was looking up any index fund and like a company. So I said, okay, look up Amazon, boys. And so when you Google Amazon, and this is for, you know, anyone out there or trying to talk to your young dependents about this, tell them to pull up Amazon and Google. And what comes up is the company, how much it gained from yesterday. You can click on, you know, 1 month, 1 day, 1 week, 5 years, and you can see the growth of the company. You can see, let's say related news articles below it, you know, oh, it's going to stock split investors, you know, or something like Tesla, like let them pick a company they love. And so the twins learned how to read a company, read an index fund to see if it'll be profitable and make their own decision. So each money club with $25, when they tell me, okay, Auntie Mellon, I'm going to put my $25 into this index fund. And I'll say, sure, why? You know, and one will explain, oh, well, this one is in the health sector and, you know, it was still in the pandemic. You know, the vaccines were coming out. He had a very, very good
explanation. Yeah.
And I was like, that's a good idea. And, you know, he's been able to see his little investment go up and up. But I give them full autonomy. Not like they don't need it. They're fine without me now. But it really does. They're not just betting. They understand why they're putting their money and where.
Yeah, there's some thought and strategy into where they're placing their money too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not GameStop because it's cool. I'm like,
although maybe there might be a little bit of that, but that's okay, you know, because as long as it interests them and they're seeing the power of like compounding interest of stuff that, you know, snowballs over time, right? Because time is the thing that makes a lot of investments really work, you know, especially like real estate, for example, right? So, you know, the earlier you get started, the better it gets in a lot of ways. So, I mean, I think it's really wonderful that you are talking to the next generation of little investors and showing them the way, and as well as all of these really great clubs that, you know, that you've started. And when you and I talked, you had mentioned that your goal really is to kind of spread these money clubs around the world to different embassies and consulates. If somebody is interested in starting a club where they are overseas, what tips would you have for them?
I love this because every discussion I have when it's open up to AFA, I promote and really do like encourage financial discussions. I don't even call them like money clubs. You know, I tell people, surround yourself with people that you want to be like. You know, if you don't know about a topic, seek out the person that does. So I wouldn't, if you are at a post and, you know, you and a couple of friends have been talking about money anyway, or maybe you don't know anyone, I'd say start with the FASTO group or even the Marines or just one or two people that say, hey, would you be interested in talking about financial health with me? You know, what are your thoughts on it? Just kind of break out of that shell a little bit, you know, present yourself as someone who's willing to learn, but also be willing to take down your own kind of barriers and share information and accept criticism. And, you know, I learn things every meeting from our members. Again, I go into this like a huge disclaimer. My slide number one is, I am not a CPA. I'm not an advisor. I am someone who had a good start. I think doing fairly well. I think I'm doing okay with financial health and try to help those around me, but also learn from them. Like, it keeps changing. And another core lesson is be flexible to change your spending strategy and your investment strategy. So Rio de Janeiro, hello, Brazil, the exchange rate is falling, you know, and so we share articles about why it's falling. Like, what are you doing in response to your dollar going, you know, not as far as before? Are you starting to save more? You know, are you starting to, let's say, leverage, you know, buying things in bulk, you know, from overseas instead of purchasing them at a higher cost? You know, any little change, like, it really is a general discussion in the group of how are you adapting? And I think that's a really important thing to put out there. It's like, you can't just put your money in one place and like, okay, I'm going to live my life like this. It's like, if things change in the market, you need to be able to change too. So we try to help each other adjust as well.
And I think, you know, there's a lot of power in a peer group because, you know, sometimes it's not fun to save money. A lot of times it's not. And I think if you're in a group where it's cool to save money because look, hey, look what you can do with it. And it's exciting. And there's like stuff you can do with investments. I mean, I think it's a brilliant, brilliant concept. And there is a power that comes from everybody pooling and, you know, resources together and working on it together because it's just more fun with more people, you know. And I found the same thing in my own experience with, you know, real estate. Cause I mean, I was sitting there by myself trying to do these things. And then once I figured out like this is a team sport, it got a lot more fun. And then, you know, even days when it's not fun, you have people to vent to also. You're like, oh no.
Yes. Well, to vent to, but also to have goals with.
Yes.
To say, right, we're saving money, but you know what? We're all going to celebrate this one person's going away by going to this. And, you know, kind of like putting, you know, money where in the things we really value. It's like, do we really need to go out four times a week? No, the exchange rate's falling. Let's make it a special thing. So yeah, definitely. It's amazing how many individuals have come to me, even the senior ranking officers, to, you know, not so much confess, but I mean, just to kind of share with me and say, well, I don't know anything about, you know, insert topic. Well, I don't know about backdoor Roth. I don't know if my TSP is traditional or Roth. I don't know, you know, and it's like, don't say that in a hushed voice. Let's talk about it. Let's open
There's
up.
Plenty of people that don't know. And I mean, all the things that go on in life. I mean, like, you're not supposed to be an expert. Like, it's totally fine. It's fine.
Yeah, and, you know, anyone that's like, it feels like, I don't know, who uses like info as like, oh, you don't know about it. It's like, yeah, I didn't. So I'm going to figure it out.
And?
Yeah. So yeah, I definitely. I learn things as I go. I encourage other people to just, you know, drop that barrier and just ask the club. We're all this like bubble of trust. You know, I do trust my colleagues with that kind of information. And I do try to recognize when someone wants to talk about, for example, debt payment strategy. Not everyone is talking about, you know, raising a down payment. And like, some people are trying to actively pay down debt. And that's a good
student, you know, loan debt for one is.
That's part of financial health too. Are you paying it off? Let's say in the best way to reduce interest? And, you know, are there other strategies for you? So structuring someone's debt repayment and helping them lower a monthly, you know, it's like, yes, you can buy into those things and consolidate your loan and pay more. I mean, it really like breaks my heart when I see some of those commercials when there are movements and tools you can use as an individual to, let's say, reduce that panic of credit cards coming in on you. Let's say before just paying a service to do it. So it's been a good learning opportunity for some to, and they've restructured some of their debt. So it's good. It's really good.
And I think that's a really important point too, because, you know, money problems, for lack of a better word to describe it, you know, debt, looming debt, you know, student loan debt that's extremely high and feels very suffocating, you know, to people is something that can get in the way of people feeling like they can do more with their money, right? And I think a lot of conversations that I've had with people about money and their money story too is, you know, it's really interesting to go back to sort of like your roots of like where you started with money, what influences you have, what's happened to you along the way, even like what generation you are and like what's going on in the economy at the time that, you know, money sort of appeared in your consciousness as something that you needed to worry about. I mean, like all of this makes up our own money stories. And I find it really fascinating to talk to people, and debt management is something that comes up, right? Because again, one of the goals of the podcast is really to make conversations about money kind of normal and to help each other with it. Because again, in the Foreign Service, like you said, we all have the same pay grade. It's not like we don't know what each other make, but there are huge differences between what people do with what they make. And there is a very unique opportunity, especially if you're out overseas, you know, things that you can play with: differentials, hardship posts, you know, not having bills, having tenants pay more. I mean, there's like a whole list of things that you can really do to get yourself and your family in a financial position where you don't have that financial stress on you, whether it's debt, whether it's, I feel like I have to do this job because I don't have any other choice and I don't know what I would do, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, being financially comfortable, financially free, even if you aspire to that, is such a liberating thing. Yes. And no, I mean, it's really wonderful. Yeah.
No, for sure. Financial independence, retire early, FIRE is definitely, that's my third tattoo. definitely aspired to do that. And I think, you know, we're trying to get people to that goal as well. Like, you know, this is a great career. We love it. I love it. I love my job, but we are making the decisions that give us the freedom to retire early if we want to.
100%. It's 100% possible for the Foreign Service. Really. Yeah.
The other side of that debt strategy is knowing your benefits. Like, excuse me, it was amazing how, you know, some of our members started sharing, hey, don't forget, as a Marine, you get this discount, you get this free. Don't forget, you can do zero down payment. Like, and the reception of that info is like, wait a minute, wait, share that link again. What can I do? And so, again, saving money so you can apply it to debt or apply it to saving or apply it to investments. Like really, I'm really grateful for how people have opened up to me and each other and how, you know, it's kind of spread like fire. I do hope this senior staff brown bag goes well. I know at least I have 5 very enthusiastic people who will join me. So I really hope it continues to spread. So again, if you're out there listening, please try to form your own, whether you're giving info, seeking info. I'd say there's probably someone at Post who would also appreciate a frank discussion about investing in travel hacking and real estate. And I will plug Tanya. She's a wonderful speaker and shared wonderful information with us that made real differences in my closing and another person's process. So
thank you, Malin. I appreciate that. And honestly, I am happy to talk about real estate as an investment for really any group, embassy group, anywhere. You know, no sales pitch. It's really just more what makes a good investment, you know, and maybe real estate isn't for you. Maybe it is. And what are the things that make it a little bit different from other asset classes, right? Because it is a specific type of thing. So really happy to talk to anybody about that. Mollen, it has been wonderful having you on the show. And I wish you the best of luck continuing to plant little money club seeds wherever you go around the world, and encourage our colleagues to, you know, learn and share from each other. I think it's a really wonderful thing that you're doing, and best of luck.
Thank you so much. And I'm pretty sure my nephews will be on your show someday in the future.
I look forward to it. You're welcome to come on and give us all stock tips, especially myself.
Yeah. But I would like to put it out there as well. If someone wanted to contact me about how I got started, or just want to talk to me, or perhaps get to know my network of people that give other free discussions as well, they're welcome to reach out to me as well. So very happy to help others get started in their FIRE clubs. Great. Awesome. Thanks for having me, Tanya.
Thanks so much, Mollen.
If you like this episode and want more, make sure to give us 5 stars on the podcast player of your choice. And after that, check out our Facebook page. From there, you can learn about our other episodes, connect with our guests, and of course, share your own ideas for success. We'll see you next time.